That base-born cow will be the last of the Queen Mothers and the death of us all, fumed Tachum as she paced the priceless mosaic covering the floor of her chamber. A comely young man reclined on a settee, watching the tall, red-veiled woman with a mixture of concern and resignation. To his way of thinking, Tachum was difficult to please and dangerous to cross, but she was also exceedingly powerful and wealthy and indulgent toward her favorites. No one could deny that the former Queen Mother was getting on in years, but she was still remarkably beautiful, straight and shapely, with elegant facial bones that defied the slackness and softening of age, and abundant red hair only slightly silvered by time. All considered, Trisden was quite content with his lot. Tenennial Joe has ruled for nearly 20 years, despite her obvious limitations, he pointed out. Surely that proves the strength and security of the royal house. Tachum shot a venomous glare at her favorite. You go among the common folk. What are they saying of Prince Isolde? His throat suddenly went dry. He is greatly loved by his people. She cut him off with an impatient, imperious gesture. Don't insult me with placating lies. My son committed a large consortium fleet to the battle that destroyed it. Since the disaster at Fondor, there have been no fewer than 7 attempts on his life, some of them from members of the royal family. Most of them initiated by Alicia, niece to Tachum, and strikingly like her in appearance and temperament. Trisden liked to think of the two women as morning and evening, and whenever possible, he divided his time accordingly. I don't see why he allowed Tenennial Joe to open Hapes to refugees. The woman's eyes flamed above her mask. He has no right to gainsay her, and no power to do so. She is the Queen Mother. And as such, she should be honored, for as long as she can manage to hold the throne, Trisden said, understanding his role. Tachum hated her daughter-in-law, but she was protective of the title and its power. She might wish to see the younger woman dead, she might even arrange it, but she would hear no slight upon the royal office. Isolde was raised in a matriarchal culture, and he respects women of strength. What can he appreciate in a barbarian like Tenennial Joe? How can he willingly accept a subordinate role to someone so obviously unworthy? Then the solution is to find him a worthy queen. These words were treason, punishable by swift and certain death, but Tachum merely nodded. You obviously would not wish to see a weak woman on the throne of Hapes, Trisden observed. But Isolde might be more content with a very young woman. No matter how competent she otherwise might be, he is more likely to feel himself in control of the situation. Naturally, a young queen would require advice from a wise and experienced mentor, and a woman of sense would not look to her husband for counsel. Tachum stared at him for several moments, her eyes crinkled, giving evidence to the smile spreading beneath her veil. I was not granted a daughter of my blood, but you're saying that perhaps I might yet train a successor and mold a promising young woman into my own image. And keep Isolde happy and out of the way while you're doing it. Laughter bubbled up from behind the crimson veil. Trisden, you are priceless. Now go and prepare yourself for the evening festivities. He sauntered off, well pleased with himself. Tachum's smile held until the door shut behind her current favorite. With a curt nod, Tachum sealed the fate of her son, his wife, and all of Hapes. Now all that remained was to find a promising young woman that Isolde might approve, and that Tachum could control. Jaina rubbed the nape of her neck with one hand, and then stretched, drawing in a long breath. For someone accustomed to the hum and roar of engines, the silence of the Yuuzhan Vong frigate was disconcerting. In the pilot seat, Zek sat bolt upright, leaning toward the viewing portal. Incoming, he snapped. Jaina spun toward the pilot seat and leaned down to peer over Zek's shoulder. A motley collection of ships, some of them Hapen vessels, some of them Hornet interceptors more suited to pirates and smugglers, sped purposefully toward them. Ganner slipped into the gunner's chair, his handsome face grim at the prospect of firing upon allies. Tahiri stepped forward. The blonde girl looked fragile but resolute.
What can I do?
Go find Lobaka, she suggested. He's still working on the tracking system. The frigate shuddered and pitched as Hapen missiles bombarded it. Jaina ripped the pilot's hood from Zek's head. You said I was doing just fine, he said, showing a flash of wry humor. Obviously, I lied, she replied in kind as she tugged the controls over her own head. He quickly yielded the seat, but continued to gaze anxiously at the viewing portal as Jaina settled in. A concussion missile hurtled toward the ship. Ganner sent a burst of plasma out to intercept it. And Jaina jinked sharply to avoid the resulting explosion. She brought the frigate around in a rising loop, then dove down between the two pursuing ships. A flurry of laser fire kept the Dubbin Basal busy, but Jaina held a steady course to allow Ganner a clean shot. Twice he fired, clipping the pursuing ships with plasma bolts. One of the Hornet interceptors exploded into shards of metals. Another ship managed to evade the shard. But the flying debris ripped through the thin metal of the third Hornet's wings, sending it into an out-of-control spiral. A surge of dismay came from Ganner. His next shot went deliberately wide. We're under attack, Jaina reminded him. I might have hit that ship. Sure, if it was the size of a battle cruiser. If you're not going to hit them, at least give them an argument. The older Jedi turned away, his jaw clenched and his thoughts carefully shielded. Meanwhile, the Hapen ships continued to batter the Yuuzhan Vong vessel. Tzar did his best with the shields, but the shots were too many and too close. Again and again, the ship shook as laser fire chipped at its hull. Worse, Jaina sensed that the overburdened Dubbin Basal was nearing the limit of its strength. Jaina swung around and poured all the energy the ship could muster into an apparent retreat. The Hapen ships gave pursuit for several moments, then abandoned the effort.
They're off to spread the word about us,
Alima said somberly. The Twi'lek pointed to the viewing portal. Beyond, tumbling slowly amidst a drift of metallic debris, was one of the ships Ganner had accidentally destroyed. The Hornet was largely intact. Only the rear segment of its insectoid body was missing.
If we're going to salvage that ship for parts, we haven't much time.
The comm system! Good thinking, Jaina agreed. She turned back toward the battle scene. After a couple of experiments, Tzar managed to calibrate the Dubbin Basal to use just enough gravity to pull in the damaged ship. The ship was empty. Perhaps the pilot had had time to go EV. But the controls looked to be intact, and Lobaka looked positively cheerful at the prospect of working with circuits and metal. It didn't take him long to find what they needed. Bellowing triumphantly, he strode into the cockpit, lugging the disembodied comm unit and an attached power pack. He set the device on the floor, set hailing frequency, and handed the speaking unit to Jaina.
This is Lieutenant Jaina Solo, a rogue squadron pilot, flying a commandeered enemy frigate. Come in. This is Lieutenant
Jaina. She repeated her hail several times before an answering crackle came over the comm.
Come in.
I never thought that static could sound so good, she murmured.
This is Hesha Lovett, captain of the Hapen Royal Vessel,
announced a female voice.
We've had reports of a Yuuzhan Vong ship. Yours, Lieutenant Solo?
I don't like to brag, Jaina said dryly. We're seeking permission to land. The sooner we get out of this thing, the happier we'll be. There was a moment's silence, then the comm crackled to life again.
By all means, Jaina.
Jaina jolted with surprise. The resonant, cultured voice with the crisply clipped accent was unmistakably that of Tachum, Tenel Ka's grandmother. She quickly scoured her mental database for the proper way to address Hapen royalty.
Thank you, Queen Mother. I wasn't sure we'd find a welcome. We were forced to fire upon Hapen ships.
Hornet interceptors,
the woman said dismissively.
Pirates, most likely. The scouts who witnessed the battle were nearly as displeased by their presence as they were yours.
We didn't have any other way to communicate until we pulled in one of the Hornets and salvaged its comm.
I will alert all patrols. By all means, land at the Royal Docks and come directly to the palace.
The stolen Yuuzhan Vong ship careened through space at full power. Zek sat at the helm. Tahiri wore the navigation hood, directing him according to information flowing to her from the navibrain. The small hands gripping the control were white-knuckled, but her voice remained steady and sure. Jaina and Lobaka huddled together away from the others. Danny Kui found a way to override the Yamask communications. That's the only explanation for the Vong confusion over Coruscant. Any idea how she did it? Wookie went into a lengthy explanation, most of which went over Jaina's head with a meter to spare. So you know how Danny Kui scrambled the Yamask? Not exactly, the Wookie moaned. We left for Merkur before any breakthrough occurred. Given your background, you could duplicate the results? Lobaka considered, then woofed an affirmative. But can you go one step further? The Wookie listened with growing fascination as Jaina described her plan. His furry shoulders shook with laughter as he made his way toward the Dovin Basel. Jaina watched, puzzled. Lobaka returned in moments, coming at a lope and carrying a familiar-looking object in his paws. He handed a small globe to Jaina with a string of grumbled instructions. A slow, sly grin crept over her face as she understood what he'd found. She reached up and ruffled his head affectionately, and then went back to work. "Is that what I think it is?" demanded Ganner, eyeing the villip with disgust. She grinned at the older Jedi and turned to Zek. "Let me have your seat." He yielded the pilot's chair, and Jaina settled down, pulled on the hood, and began to stroke the oddly shaped globe. "Are you sure that's a good idea?" ventured Zek. "Can you talk and fly at the same time?" Her only response was a derisive sniff. "We don't know who will answer," he persisted. "True, but chances are that'll be something worth knowing. The more we can learn about this ship, the better our chances for survival." The outer layer of the villip peeled back. The tissue within began to reshape itself into the likeness of the Yuuzhan Vong who had been attuned to this villip. In moments, Jaina held in her hands a horrific face, one marked by fringed lips and a tangle of scars. She knew that face. Everyone in the galaxy with access to a holovid knew it. This was the War Master, Savang La. Not long ago, he'd sent a communication throughout the galaxy calling for the destruction of the Jedi and demanding Jason Solo. Jaina had seen that holovid replayed many times, but her blood boiled anew with each viewing.
"The sacrifice has been completed?" demanded the War Master.
Jaina held the villip closer to her face and sent her brother's enemy a knife-edged smile. "Not yet." The villip crinkled into an ominous frown.
"You were to contact me when your duty was complete, Nomanor, and not before. Pray you are not contacting me to report another failure."
She glanced at her friends, her brown eyes sparkling with something resembling her old spirit. "Oh, this is too good," she marveled. "This is Nomanor's ship. The villip must not be attuned to him, though, or you'd think Savang La would notice the difference." Ganner threw up both hands. "I don't know, Jaina. You've definitely looked better. And you still look like a holovid hero. Where's the justice in that?" she shot back good-naturedly. "Anyway, Lobaka thinks this villip is a way for a ship's pilot, whoever that might be, to report to a fleet admiral. When you think about it, that makes sense. I don't have a complete handle on how villips work, but from what I hear, they seem to allow one specific person to talk to one other specific person. But what happens if that villip connection is broken? They've got to have some way of communicating with a ship, not just a person. Lobaka found this thing on board, growing in a hydroponic vat. Maybe the ship itself attunes the villip, and the pilot's connection with the ship allows communication."
"Who is this?" demanded the War Master.
Jaina turned her attention back to the globe. Let's put it this way. I'm contacting you to report another failure, she said, turning his earlier words back upon him. Savang La's cruel eyes narrowed.
This is not Noma Nor. You are not even Yuuzhan Vong. The Villip is translating.
His face twisted with fury as the logical answer presented itself.
The Jedi.
Got it in one, she mocked. For a long moment, the image of Savang La merely glared at her. Then his frayed lips twisted in a sneer.
And this, I suppose, is where you offer yourself in your brother's place.
Why bother? I know you won't let Jason go.
That is true enough. But are you so sure of your motivation?
He taunted her.
You are the lesser twin. The one who would fall in sacrifice. Perhaps it suits your purposes to keep your brother's sword far from your throat.
Jaina began to understand what this sacrifice entailed. We would fight each other?
Of course. That is how it is done.
Her mind raced as she tried to improvise a plan. It occurred to her that it might be best to play into the War Master's perceptions. That's how it's always done, she agreed. Jason and I are twins. This is our destiny.
You understand this much, yet you run from destiny?
She inclined her head in a bow. A look of surprise flickered over the Villip-reflected face, indicating that her gesture of respect had somehow been translated. You are right, War Master. Noma Nor's ship is disabled. I can run no further.
What is your position?
He demanded.
Obviously, you are wearing the pilot hood. Ask the ship.
A moment, please. She put the Villip down carefully, then looked at Ganner and mouthed the words, Get Lobaka. The big Jedi nodded and sprinted off in search of the Wookiee. A few moments later, a big hairy fist thrust out into the central corridor and gave her a thumbs up. Here goes, Jaina muttered and turned back to the Villip. I can't get an answer from the ship, she said, her tone defensive and edged with a bit of a whine. Is there some way the ship could be traced through the Yamask that controls it?
Noma Nor is an independent agent. His ship answers to no Yamask, but sometimes a Yamask can pick up a stranded ship. The Dovin Basals are strongly inclined to link.
This Dovin Basal is ailing, Jaina said eagerly. Linking might keep it alive long enough for me to... She let her words trail off. A sneer crossed Savang La's reflected face as he read the meaning Jaina intended to portray. Obviously, he thought she was stalling for time, gaining needed repairs in hopes of fleeing capture.
I have sent agents to oversee the sacrifice. No doubt, they are in close pursuit. You will be meeting them shortly.
Before Jaina could respond, the Villip shifted back to its formless state. What now? Demanded Ganner. Jaina pulled off the hood and smiled. They'll come to us. The War Master set aside the offending Villip and bellowed an order. A subordinate came at a near run, bearing a second, larger Villip. Savang La stroked the globe. It shifted to reveal a face similar to his own in shape and expression. The reflected warrior was younger, his flesh taut and clear, but not less scarred. Elaborate black tattoos covered an angular gray face. A small horn protruded from a high, broad forehead. Black eyes as soulless as a shark's stared back.
War Master,
the newcomer proclaimed, inclining his head in respect.
I have found the female, the War Master said without preamble. She has offered to surrender. A ploy, of course, a pitiful attempt to buy time to escape. You will persuade the Yamask aboard the priest ship to link with the frigate and accept this additional ship in its communication family.
Of course, War Master.
Inform Harar that he may contact the Jedi directly through the Kastar's ship's Villip.
An expression of surprise crossed the young warrior's face.
He possesses a commander's villip? He holds it in trust, Tsavang La corrected. When the Jedi sacrifice is completed, he will pass it to you, along with the rank and honors that attend it. See to it that this day comes soon.
His son inclined his head in a deep bow.
I am honored, War Master, but I would do so regardless of reward. My personal advancement is a pale thing compared to the service due our gods.
The War Master received this pious speech in silence.
Go and do.
Again the young warrior bowed, and the villip quickly reverted. Tsavang La's lip curled as he regarded the villip.
Harar seems to be failing, he said softly, in more ways than one.
Jaina did not notice when the villip began to change. Zek's soft, grim oath drew her attention back to the living communication sphere. It depicted a thin, almost aesthetic-looking visage, not quite as garishly scarred as the War Master's. An elaborately wound cloth swathed his head.
Harar, a priest of Yun-Harla, the trickster goddess,
the image said curtly.
It will be my honor to preside over your sacrifice.
The honor is mine, Jaina said dryly. I've been wondering what to call this rock. Trickster sounds just about right.
That is not suitable. We have a custom of naming ships.
So do we, Jaina replied. Raw fury flooded the Yuuzhan Vong's face.
Whatever paltry tricks you may have in mind will serve no purpose. The attunement has been transferred. My ability to speak to you indicates that my ship's Yamask is making contact with your Dovin Basal. Any minor control you have over the Kastar...
The trickster, Jaina corrected.
...will be superseded,
he finished, ignoring the interruption. Tahiri let out a small gasp. To her credit, she did not remove the navigational hood. You are establishing contact? Jaina repeated in feigned alarm.
It is done.
Jaina turned the villip upside down, causing it to invert and break contact with the priest. She turned to her friends with a triumphant smile. The wave of shock and condemnation hit her like a physical blow.
Before you say anything, let me explain. Lobaka has been playing with the ship's sensors. We're receiving their signal, but blocking ours.
You can't be sure of that, protested Zek.
I'm sure, Tahiri broke in. The Yuuzhan Vong ships manipulate gravity. That's how they move, shield, even navigate. I'm hooked up to this thing. I should know.
Go on, urged Ganner.
The sensors gather information from shifts in gravity fields. Every ship has a pattern, sort of like a signature.
That's right, Jaina broke in. Lobaka used some parts from the Hornet Interceptor to rig up a mechanical disruption. The Dovin Basal doesn't know that the signals it's sending the Yamask are scrambled.
It sounds feasible, Ganner said, doubt still suffusing his voice.
But if you're wrong, the Vong might follow us to Hapes. We'd be endangering a world, a system, that is in no shape to defend itself. Before Jaina could respond, white-hot pain exploded through her senses. She ripped off the cognition hood, but the agony didn't lessen in the slightest. Dimly, she realized that it came not from the ship, but from every Jedi aboard. She felt them all through the meld her twin had initiated, and all of them formed a single thought.
Jason.
The surge ended abruptly, and the second-hand sensation disappeared. For a moment, Jaina sat frozen, stunned beyond speech. Jason had appeared in the Force, but not to her. Jaina had assumed that they'd all lost connection with Jason after his capture because of the Force-shielding presence of the Vong. She could accept that her own grief and anger blocked his ability to contact her. But as Jaina looked from one stunned face to another, she saw a darker truth. Her brother's death was written on Lobaka's furred face and in Tekli's rodent black eyes. It was in the sorrow that flowed from all of them. A trio of starships appeared in the distance, so suddenly that Jaina had the uncanny feeling that she'd conjured them with her unspoken fears. Faint lines of light slid out of hyperspace and slowed into focused, rapidly approaching dots. She snatched up the comm Lobaka had rigged and opened the frequency to hail. "This is Lieutenant Jaina Solo of Rogue Squadron, aboard the Yuuzhan Vong frigate Trickster. The ship is under Republic control. There are no Yuuzhan Vong aboard. Repeat, this is not an enemy ship. Hold your fire."
"Relax, Trickster. We're here to see you safely down,"
announced a familiar voice. The last voice Jaina expected or wanted to hear. "Kip Duran," she said coldly. "You might as well turn around right now. I wouldn't follow you out of an ocean if I were drowning."
"Hear me out before you open fire. Your parents are on Hades in the refugee center. I told the princess I'd bring you back. Now, you could send me back to Leia empty-handed, but we all know what path a vindictive spirit might take you down."
She absorbed his dark humor in silence as she considered his words and the likely consequences of his presence. Her parents had enough to deal with without the added grief that always seemed to follow Kip like fumes from a faulty exhaust. "Don't use my family in another of your tricks, if they're really on Hades at all."
"This is Jag Fell, Lieutenant Solo,"
broke in another voice.
"I have seen your mother on Hades, and the request for an escort came directly to me from landing control. Kip Duran is speaking the truth, and flying under my command."
"Suit yourself. But while you're watching my back, keep an eye on your own." As soon as the Yuuzhan Vong frigate set down, she suggested that it rest, and then yanked off the hood. The other Jedi had left the ship by the time she finished shutting down. When she reached the open hatch, she noted them standing together in a tight knot. Jaina hurried down the ramp. Before she could say anything, she noted a two-person landspeeder skimming toward them. Almost before it stopped, Leia flung herself from it and hurried to her daughter, her eyes bright with relief. "We brought Anakin with us," Jaina said. "Jason, we couldn't get to. I'm sorry." Leia stepped forward and embraced her daughter. "Don't worry about Jason," she said softly. "He might seem fragile at times, but he's a survivor." Jaina stiffened, startled by her mother's comment. Leia was as sensitive to the Force as any trained Jedi, and in Jaina's opinion, the epitome of grace under pressure. How could she block this? Her eyes sought out her father's face. Han looked from her to Leia, his eyes wary.
"Mom, Jason is gone. We all felt it."
"One way or another," she added silently. The older woman shook her head. "He's still alive," she stated, quietly but with implacable conviction. For a moment, Jaina was at a complete loss for words. Han's gaze shifted from his wife to his daughter. Never had the resemblance between them been stronger than at this moment. He shook his head in bemusement. "And here I thought I was outnumbered by the Vong," he muttered. Jaina enfolded him in a quick, hard hug.
"Take care of Mom," she whispered.
He held her off at arm's length and glanced toward the group of solemn young Jedi gathering around Anakin's bier. "You're not staying?"
"I've said my goodbyes."
Jaina pulled free, exchanged another look with her mother, then strode off without a backward glance. It was pure instinct that sent Han after her. Leia stopped him abruptly, one hand on his chest.
"She's your daughter," Leia reminded him.
"She has to deal with loss in her own way and in her own time." Han considered this. The expression on his face was that of a man who gazed into a mirror and disliked what he saw. He grimaced and passed one hand over his face. "She's my daughter," he admitted, "and I'm an idiot." Leia went into Han's arms, the last sure haven in the galaxy, and turned her face into his chest to hide the tears she could no longer contain. Jaina's pace quickened as she left the docks at a dead run,
as if she could outpace the memory of her father's face when he'd realized that both his sons were gone. She set a direct course for the palace. Its labyrinthine marble halls were the best place she could think of to lose herself for a while. Moving on autopilot, she found her way into a courtyard garden and down shaded paths that seemed designed with solitude and secrecy in mind. She slumped down on the moss-covered rocks, artfully piled beside a carved bench, and finally allowed herself to feel. What she felt, mostly, was numb. Since leaving Merkur, her path had seemed clear. The first order of business was to survive, to finish the task Anakin had passed to Jason, to bring the other young Jedi to a place of safety, and after that, to rescue Jason. Jaina hadn't allowed herself to think of anything else, to feel anything that might distract her from these goals. Her headlong progress had been stopped short, and she felt as dazed as if she'd flown a land speeder into a tree. She felt the approach of a powerful presence and glanced up as a tall, graceful woman emerged from the shadows of a grape arbor and glided purposefully down the path toward her. The woman wore a softly draping gown, and her russet hair gleamed above the scarlet veil covering the lower half of her face. Feeling resigned, but not at all surprised, Jaina rose and dipped into a bow. Tachum waved away the formalities. The former Queen Mother settled down on the bench and motioned for Jaina to join her. She removed her veil, revealing a still elegant face distinguished by fine, sharp bones. "It is good to see you again, Jaina. I heard about your brothers." Jaina took the offered place beside Tachum and braced herself for yet another round of meaningless condolences. This response seemed to amuse the former queen. "I take it you've had your fill of platitudes and exhortations about keeping the faith?" "You might say that." "Then let's get to the heart of the matter. Your brothers are dead, and those responsible still live. The only reasonable question is, what are you going to do about it?" There was something refreshing about plain speech, and even an odd sort of comfort. "That's the question, all right." The older woman patted her shoulder. "You will find your way to an answer soon, of that I am certain. And tonight will be an excellent time to start. There will be a diplomatic dinner at the palace, and you would do well to attend. Now then," she said briskly, "I suggest that we find you a suitable gown and gems." Her eyes slid quickly over Jaina's unruly brown hair. "And perhaps a hairpiece." Jaina shrugged this off. "I'm a pilot. Appearances aren't important to what I do. Beauty is a tool to be used, just like intelligence or talent or power or even this force of yours. Don't disdain it. It's more important on Hapes than in most places. More common, too." Jaina shrugged. "No matter what I do, I'd fall short of your world's standards." "Nonsense, on all counts. I suspect that you possess many resources you have not yet considered." Jaina regarded the older woman. The former queen was a powerful presence in the Force, yet she possessed formidable shields. Jaina could get no sense of what she was thinking, but she took what she knew of Tachum and made some assumptions. "You want something from me," she said bluntly. "Forgive me, but I'm running short on time and illusions." Tachum smiled, not at all offended. "All I ask is that you keep your mind open to all possibilities. These are strange times, and you may find yourself in a position to accomplish things you never dreamed possible. Now, about that gown." She rose and headed for the palace. After a moment, Jaina followed. Tachum had access to ships, fuel, and ammunition, all the things Jaina would need to take the fight to the Vong. And apparently the former queen was willing to trade. Jaina had no idea what currency Tachum had in mind, but that didn't particularly worry her. She almost looked forward to matching wits with someone who'd made an art form of deception and intrigue. Like lightsaber practice, it might serve to sharpen her wits and skills in preparation for a real battle.
Tenel Ka made her way across the ridge of the palace armory's steeply sloped roof, running lightly and in perfect balance. The sprawling inner courtyard lay below her, and from this vantage, she commanded a clear view of the west gate. Several guards were stationed on either side of the portal, which was used only by members of the royal family. Her father was due to return shortly, and a strong premonition prompted Tenel Ka to set her own watch. She sped up as she approached the end of the roof and hurled herself into the air. Soaring over the 8-foot divide without benefit of her Jedi powers, she landed in a crouch on the lower, flatter roof of the palace kitchens. The brazen keening of Duggle horns cleaved the air, announcing Prince Isolder's approach. Tenel Ka crouched and crept cautiously to the edge of the roof. Her cool gray eyes darted over gardens and outbuildings, looking for anything that seemed out of place. All appeared to be as it should be. She watched as an older woman, in a loose apron dress, climbed the stairs to the Blizzcot, a large birdhouse that enticed the plump little Blizz to enter and nest. Their tiny pink-shelled eggs were a Hapen delicacy and would certainly be included on the evening menu. The old woman climbed slowly, hauling herself along the railing with one hand and clutching an egg basket with the other. A very large egg basket. The Jedi warrior ripped a flat stone tile from the roof and rose to her feet. Three things happened in rapid succession. The west gate opened to admit Isolde. The old woman whipped a blaster from the oversized basket and pointed it at the prince. Tenel Ka hurled the tile with all her strength, sending it spinning toward the assassin. Her aim held true, and the tile struck the arm holding the weapon with a force that spun the assassin around and sent her tumbling down the stairs. The shot went wild, pinging down into the orchards, sending golden fruit plummeting and launching birds into startled, squawking flight. The palace guards were upon the assassin before she'd reached the bottom. Hubris, an impressive female warrior who'd been with the prince since before Tenel Ka was born, hauled the assailant to her feet and jerked off the hood. A hush fell over the courtyard. The assassin was a young woman, and her face was familiar to them all. Tenel Ka climbed down a trellis and stalked toward the defiant woman. She stopped a few paces away and gazed into a face very like her own. "Greetings, cousin," she said coolly. "Aunt Chelik must be desperate for the throne if she is willing to sacrifice her own daughter to get it." Without waiting for response, she turned to the guard and nodded. Hubris hauled the traitor away. Tenel Ka took a long breath, for she understood the sentence awaiting her blood kin. An attack against a member of the royal family was punishable by death, but recently this law had proved an insufficient deterrent. She turned away and went to greet her father. The prince stood inside the West Bailey, listening to his bodyguard's description of the near escape. He was a tall man with a fighter's disciplined physique. Pale gold hair was pulled severely back into a single thick braid, framing a face that was exceptionally handsome, even by Hapen standards. The gaze he turned upon Tenel Ka was both proud and somber. "Princess, they tell me that I owe you my life. Clear thinking, quick action, essential qualities for a ruler." Tenel Ka suppressed a sigh and turned up her cheek for her father's kiss. "Welcome home. You had a profitable trip?" "Walk with me, and I'll tell you about it." He smiled down at her. "But please, not on the rooftops." They left the kitchen area for the protected inner gardens. Even there, Tenel Ka kept alert, scanning the arbors and alcoves for signs of movement. "You know, of course, that Tenennial Joe has opened Hapes to refugees," Prince Isolder began. Tenel Ka's face clouded with dismay at her father's formal, distant tone. Things between her parents had been strained for quite some time. "The people displaced by war need a haven," she observed. "I don't disagree, but the Queen Mother's decision ensures that we will face the invaders."
I've spent much of the last year finding and studying what information we have been able to amass. The more we understand these Yuuzhan Vong, the better our chances of survival. She leaned forward, her gray eyes intense.
Of what significance are twins?
Isolder thought this over. Judging from the information available, twin births seem to be uncommon among the Yuuzhan Vong. I can recall three mentions. Each was thought to be a portent of some great event. In each, one twin killed the other as a prelude to some great destiny.
Tenel Khan nodded thoughtfully. And if one twin dies in some other fashion?
I don't know. It seems likely that the survivor will still be viewed as an important person. Why do you ask?
Jason Solo is dead, she said bluntly, and the Yuuzhan Vong know he has a twin sister.
Isolder sent her a sympathetic look. I see.
With respect, I don't think you do. I fear for Jaina's safety, yes, but the Yuuzhan Vong can do far worse than kill. Tahiri, Anakin Solo's friend, was captured on Yavin 4 and turned over to the Shapers. They scarred her body and implanted memories in her mind in an attempt to make her over into something more like them.
Jaina is not under their power?
Not directly, no. But if the Yuuzhan Vong perceive her to be the central figure in some important event, they may create a situation that will force her into that role. It is a form of shaping.
Isolder gave her shoulder a comforting pat. She is a strong-willed and resourceful young woman.
Fact, agreed Tenel Ka, but the path she is taking concerns me. In claiming affinity to their trickster goddess, she has thrown down a challenge they cannot refuse. And in taking on this role, she has already begun to assimilate the Yuuzhan Vong's expectations. I do not like to contemplate what Jaina's great destiny might be, as defined by these invaders and her response to them.
Is this so different from what we all must do? No one is born free of the burden of expectations.
She cut him off with a swiftly upraised hand. If you're trying to nudge me onto the throne of Hapes, you might as well save your time and mine.
Her father was silent for several moments.
Will you at least consider the possibility? Isolder pressed.
Tenel Ka ran her hand over her red-gold hair, plaited, as always, into the braids of a Dathomiri fighter.
I'm not a ruler, but a warrior.
Who better to lead in time of war? Surely your grandmother has also urged you along this path.
I haven't seen much of her, she said.
It hadn't escaped her notice that since their arrival, Tachum had taken more interest in Jaina than in her own royal heir. There was no jealousy in this observation, but a great deal of concern. Jaina was no fool, but she couldn't possibly know the truth of the old woman.